Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
James catches, puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound Bosch. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining. Spurs do not have a timeout. Chris Bosch with the huge offensive rebound. They need a three. Green trying to get free. Cross-court pass to Green. Green blocked by Bosch. Game over. There'll be a game seven. Chris Bosch with some extraordinary plays at both ends of the floor at the end of regulation and overtime.
Free agency, summer 2010, mother. This is what we all been waiting for. D-Wade, you better re-sign July 1st. Eastbo, we got your back. Riley, keep your ass in the office.
Heat season is done. Now on to free agency. We're hearing lots of names, like LeBron and Mari. But we need D-Wade to pair with the guy who hits shots. That's why, Pat Riley, go out and sign Chris Bosch.
Bosch, 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 Bosch,
all right.
Bosch, 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 Bosch.
It was really bad, but you guys made your point.
It's like a fine wine.
Chris Bosch, man. Halftime ceremony tonight. Heat Magic, big game itself, 8 versus 9. Jersey retirement for Chris. And I'm glad to see him back and as a member of the Big Three and the 4 years that Chris was a big part of. Good for him tonight, man. It'll be fun. See how they handle it. And I'm guessing that'll get everybody a little fired up tonight as Chris is going. You know what's funny? I always feel like Chris, a lot of people just, you talk about Big Three, and he's even said being the third wheel's not easy.
Sure. Of course not. Not coming from where he came from. He was the number one guy in Toronto.
And he came here, and then, of course, LeBron James made his announcement and everything, and then the rest been history, and 4 years of just unbelievable sellout. Didn't matter who was in town. You know, it was a blast, and we all had fun watching it, knowing you're going to play into late June. But, Chris, it just seems like we'll never, ever get the respect that other guys get.
No, you're right, because he was always like, the blame guy, right? Like, he wasn't doing enough. Why isn't he doing more? Oh, you had LeBron Wade on the team.
Well, that's why he said, listen, being the third option's not easy. And then I remember the second one was, hey, guys, I ain't getting anything called for me here, okay? I'm cool, but you guys kind of getting on me. I don't know what you expect. And then there were the games where when he did get a chance to shine, had some huge games, and even during the playoffs at times when they got rolling, their Big Three were putting up some big, big numbers every night. And, of course, Chris, just one of the better big man shooters that we had in the game. And but it just seemed like it was really, really hard for him to fit in. And he did. And he did all the, you know, we just heard the offensive rebound, pass out to Ray Allen, block at the other end. So he did a lot of things. And we always forget this. He was 24 and almost 11 rebounds his last year in Toronto. Had a nice run in there his last 5 years in Toronto. Put up basically about 23 and 10 a night. So he came here. And anyway, we got the Big Three. And, of course, everybody said it kind of changed basketball after that. Everybody started trying to load up through free agency and everything else to get their own Big Three. Of course, Golden State took it to a new level.
Well, they just drafted theirs and then signed Kevin Durant.
They said, we'll go that, and then we'll get Kevin Durant to come down here and get him some championships.
You do have to give the Warriors credit. They did draft Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green.
Yeah.
And they signed Durant. Like, Durant was kind of, and they won how many games without Durant? Like, how many? They won a championship without Durant.
They won one with him.
Yeah.
Almost had a second one. But anyway, you know, it's good. Good night for Chris Bosch with everything. And we're over the blood clot. And, you know, there's some bad blood for a while. And Chris obviously wanted to play. We kept hearing about he was going to come back and play. And, you know, I'm not done. And there's more to this story. And, But it's good to see that age 35, it looks like he's got it out of his system. Talking about this ceremony tonight, the Hall of Fame and everything else. And who knows? He may be a double jersey guy, right? One of the best players in the history of Toronto.
He should be.
So he could be a double jersey guy.
He should. He should have his jersey
Toronto,
retired in both
Miami,
places.
Yep. And back down here living. And, of course, that game tonight is really big because the Magic, playing great, got a nice win last night against 76ers. So they got 36 wins now, winning 119-98 last night. So all that stuff is going to be coming up and should be a lot of fun for a must-watch tonight to see what's going to happen. We're down to just a handful of games here. And, boy, the Heat got some tough ones with some of the best teams in the East coming up. And I don't know if we're getting towards rest guys, not the Heat, but the guys they'll be playing as they try to get into their position and slot 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and everything else there. By the way, the Panthers last night, 7-5 loss for them in Toronto. 10 back and basically done. They're one game away. They got 6 games left, so they're down. 76 games, 78 points. You can kiss that 96 points we talked about.
Bye-bye.
Not a chance for that right now. So are you going to get in the 90s would be the question. And most likely, what? I guess you can't even. You're at 88 maximum points now you can get if you get everything. So anyway, we've got a lot more. David Weinstein's going to join us. We're going to get in some legal stuff. Cameron Wolf's going to join us, ESPN reporter for Miami Dolphins. He's got a pretty strong article out with some pretty strong stuff that I'm guessing when you talk about one guy, and Mike Tannenbaum's the guy in a lot of the article about getting this thing cleaned up. I think Mike Tannenbaum's got to understand one thing, and he may not like it, but when you're the VP of football operations, that to me says at the end of the day, you got final say. Yeah. You're the one guy that can call the owner. He wants to know what's going on, what he wants done. Your job's to make sure it gets done.
Absolutely.
So, and you're the one that maybe if the owner's like, hey, I want to win. Are we close? Let's get this guy. Let's get that guy. Go, no, that's a bad move. Or, hey, we are trying to do something like that. But you also have to be the guy that says, too much of a fan here, Mr. Ross. This is not a good move.
They probably could have done without the Sue move.
Well, there's just recently been
and extending Tannehill 3 times,
redoing contracts, right? Is just did some really poor cap management
that
stuff.
That had a lot to do with Gase too, right?
Well, if it was up to Gase, I mean, if you just listen to him, I mean, he
wasn't
attached to guys. He liked his guys that he had before, and he was big into loyalty and what he thought. Were going to be really good guys in the locker room, which didn't turn out to be that way for some of those guys. Yeah. And so they extended some contracts out and restructured some guys to get more money to pay other guys. And the whole thing at both ends was just not a good move. And that's why, as the article says from Cameron Wolf, you're getting into trying to get out of salary cap hell right now. So anyway, it's going to come with all the guys. Adam Gase is getting his share of criticism too.
But Tannenbaum was the end all be all. That's where Greer is now. But that's what Tannenbaum was when all these deals were made, from Branch to Sue to extending Tannehill. Everything had to go through him before it went through Stephen Ross.
Listen, we got people still calling Adam this quarterback and offensive guru. Honestly, I haven't seen it since Peyton Manning.
Didn't happen down here.
I looked at the stats, and a lot of them were the same every year. Really bad in third down, plays per game offensively. There were a lot of bad. Now, you can say injury, but a lot of teams can. So, you know, he should get some of this too, and some of the things and dealing with some of his players and some stuff that he also has been criticized for. But, yeah. And then the guy in the middle probably shouldn't get a hall pass either. It's Chris Greer, who ended up...
I don't think he should get a hall pass at all. As a matter of fact, he was in the room for all these deals also. And I feel like he just kind of skated through all this and then got the big job.
Well, I don't know, and I wasn't in any of those meetings.
Like, I agree with Armando's article. Like, I don't know. It is kind of worrisome.
Chris Greer is never going to come out and rip anybody.
Of course
like,
not.
Look, I got one guy on one side. I got a guy on the other telling me this is the way they want to do it. So I was just going along, man. And which, by the way, I don't want to hear from my general manager, especially not now, because Brian and Chris are running the show. And they better be on the same page here, because there's going to be no more finger pointing. It's only going to go into that mirror, into the mirror, and that's it now. And, you know, there's not a lot of people have confidence in Chris that he can do it because of what just took place. And whatever you want to say, his title the last few years between Adam and Mike has been general manager.
Absolutely.
So.
That scares me a lot. It really does scare me with this because the guy in charge now was the guy that's still sitting in the room the last couple of years.
Chris has got a chance to either get this thing turned around, find a franchise quarterback. It's going to be under his watch to find it. And he either gets it done or he doesn't.
Or he's not here. That's it.
And I think he's got the shortest leash of anybody. His leash can be shorter than the head coaches.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Turned around. We got to go to a break here. We've got David Weinstein going to join us. We've got a lot of legal stuff going on, right? Avenatti, we'll get into his stuff, Robert Kraft stuff, and everybody else coming up here in just a moment. And then we'll get into Cameron Wolf's article. Oof. And also Pro Wolf. Well, he was out, boy. You ain't kidding.
Between him and Armando, this was a little negative day, man.
And then Armando yesterday, he's still mad at Chris for not coming clean. He messed up on Tannehill.
Is this going to be all season?
Just say you kept him too long, Chris. No, I don't think we did. Come on, say it. I'm not letting you pick the next guy unless you come clean.
By the way, losing this season is not going to make any of these articles better. If they do. When they do. If they do.
It's going to get ugly.
I know it is.
It's going to get ugly from time to time.
It's going to be a long football season.
All right. We got Dave again joining us here in a few minutes. Radio.com.
Radio.com. All right. Let's head out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Buy now and save big during the grand reopening of the all-new Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. David Weinstein, attorney for Henshaw and Culbertson, joining us this morning. Good morning, David. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing great. David, we always got legal stuff, man. It always comes back to sports, and that's where we love having you as much as CBS4 does. But I think we're a little better to you than they are, to be honest, than TV. You want to take a shot at those guys, David? Or are you good with them?
I'm good with them. Oh, okay. Joe, I'm somewhere in between having a voice for the radio.
Well done.
Hey, we want to ask you about the latest coming out from Avenatti. What were your thoughts on getting arrested and charged with this pretty serious stuff, man? Extortion, embezzlement, bank and tax fraud. How serious is stuff, and especially going after Nike, saying he's got all this stuff on Nike. What'd you think of the whole thing once you read it?
Well, he's got trouble on both coasts. His bigger problem seems to be on the West Coast. That investigation's been going on a lot longer. His problem on the East Coast is that he just went about it in the wrong way. It's one thing to have a client who has a factual allegation that's true and to approach somebody, whether it's a company or an individual, and say, look, my client has information. We're going to get ready to sue you. Would you like to settle this? It's another thing to go after them and tell them you're going to hold a press conference, you're going to squeeze them, you're going to hold them up, you're going to make them pay you. That's what brought it up to extortion.
Why would a guy with such a big name, he's been in all the stories, including against the president, why would he be so reckless, a guy that was talking about even being a president of the running for president of the United States? I just don't understand it. He seemed like a smart guy to do such dumb things.
Well, you know, Joe, if it weren't for people doing dumb things, I wouldn't have any clients. But I think with Avenatti, I think what happened is that he sort of got himself wrapped up in everything that he was trying to fight against. The tactics he used were the same tactics that the National Enquirer used against his client, Stormy Daniels. And he just got lost in the morass here. He certainly may have a client who has information about Nike paying high school athletes, but the way that he went about it, he decided he was going to use social media, he was going to use his newfound fame and celebrity status, and put money in his pocket. He just forgot to do what he was supposed to do, and that was behave like a gentleman and a lawyer, even if you have damning evidence.
Is he still had that press conference? We're still trying to figure out. He said he's still coming out with this press conference, and all of a sudden he's got to get some advice from somebody. That's a bad idea, correct?
Well, it's always a bad idea that once there have been charges filed for you to say anything else in public or in private about the charges themselves. They're going to come back and they're going to use his words against him. His best defense is going to be, I had a client. I still have a client. This client has information, and I was simply trying to get Nike to settle a lawsuit with my client. I don't see any point in him having this press conference, but that doesn't mean he won't go ahead and have it.
You think he'll end up having it? Because I look at this and say this is the kind of guy that 100% wants to be in front of the cameras and everything today, especially after yesterday being arrested and then having to bond himself out.
Having a lawyer for a client is the absolute worst thing to have. I don't think he's going to listen to advice from anybody. I think that he believes that he did nothing wrong, and he's going to keep going forward with his plan. And that plan is going to be, I'm going to expose Nike, and I'm going to hold my press conference. Again, I don't think it's a good idea, but he hasn't asked me.
How serious could this be as far as years if they find you guilty?
He's looking at some excessive double-digit years here. Ooh. Between the case in California and the case here. The amount of money that he's alleged to have embezzled from clients out in California, the amount of money he was demanding from Nike are going to put him in, at least on both of those cases alone, probably in 8 to 9 years.
Oof. Do you think he's more now, not in trouble, because of it, but because of the whole Stormy Daniels and the president thing, and he's just kind of in the news a little bit more, is this going to be worse for him, in general?
Well, I think that it's never going to allow him to sort of take his case off the back burner, because we know somebody who's going to be following this from every yeah, development in the right. story.
That's right.
And it's going to be part of his daily tweets at 7 o'clock in the morning. So he's now never going to be out of the public eye. And yeah, it's going to be a lot worse for him.
All right, let's get to Robert Kraft. I know we've spoken to you about this one before. I'm truly sorry. Finally came out before the NFL owner meetings. What'd you think when you read that? I was just curious when you read it, what you thought.
I don't know what you thought, Joe, but what is it he's truly sorry about? Is
that's
he truly
what I
sorry
said.
About his conduct, or is he truly sorry that he got caught and that if he doesn't prevail on this motion to keep this video quiet, that everybody's going to see what happened?
Can they block that video? Is it legally? Can they do it, or is that thing going to leak out and we're going to see it on TMZ any day?
He's going to do his best to block this video. Until it becomes part of the public record, it's not for public consumption. If he and his lawyers decide that they're not going to ask for it in discovery, that they don't need to see it, then it's not going to come out. They've asked the judge to keep it from the public view. It contains private information both about Kraft and about the two women who were involved. And until it's needed as evidence in a court case, it's not really for public consumption.
David Weinstein, attorney for Hinshaw and Culbertson, joining us here on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. So what could happen to Robert Kraft? Like is there an end game to all this? Joe's slapping his wrist right now, but what's the end game for the prosecution on
for
this?
A guy that's worth
what are they looking
for? Billion.
Yeah, what are they looking to get? Because unless he was involved in the trafficking, which it doesn't look like, or maybe you never know, but I don't think he was. But what's the end game in all this?
I mean, they've got what they want in the end game here. What they want is to humiliate the Johns who were involved and to make it clear that if you engage in this type of activity, whether or not you're active in the human trafficking or if you're just supporting the people who are active in the human trafficking, that you're going to be publicly shamed and humiliated and there's consequences for it. So they've got what they wanted from this.
Yeah.
What they're going to get further from it, a fine and some community service. I don't know, where they're continuing to push on this. If he wants to resolve it and go into the diversion program, he should be allowed to do that. If he wants to take it to trial and they want to move to suppress everything, he can still try and keep that video out. He can get the search warrants and he can attack those and try to suppress the evidence and keep it out that way without ever making anybody bring those videos. And he can go to trial and not ask to see the videos before he goes to trial. But, the end game of the prosecution, I think they already got what they wanted to get.
David, for him, it's just embarrassment, right, at this point. He's got all the money in the world. He doesn't want his kids and grandkids to
see whatever
happened for a couple of seconds in there, or whatever it might have been, right? It's just the embarrassment of that.
It's the embarrassment of that. And then, again, his bigger problem is the NFL. What are they going to do to him? it's going to be more than a slap on the wrist. I don't know that they're going to be able to force him to sell the team.
No.
It's not like what happened with the Panthers owner. It's not like what happened with the Clippers owner. But you know, they're going to penalize him in some way for his conduct for tarnishing the shield.
David, always good stuff, man. Really appreciate you spending a few minutes there last second to come in and talk a little bit about this. Thank you.
You're welcome, Joe. Always glad to talk to you guys. Doesn't matter.
Thank you, man.
You reach out for
me. All right. Go Bills, man. Just for you. Go Bills, David.
Wow. Cut that tape.
I am going to cut that.
Yeah. Damn, Dave. You just got him.
Go Josh Allen.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Right there for you, man.
David Weinstein.
Looking up this year, Joe.
You bet, man.
David Weinstein, attorney for Hinshaw and Culberson, joining us here on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Yeah, slap on the wrist. Right?
Yeah. It's just the embarrassment thing.
Well, I mean, that's the biggest thing.
He does,
right?
He doesn't want to see that thing pop up on TMZ and then spread like wildfire where everybody else picks it up. And it's just the embarrassment of being at a party and everybody goes, "Hey, saw you." I started to say it, man. Can we?
That's what
you gonna dump me if I say?
Yes, just don't say it.
Yeah.
Jeez, brother.
Everyone knows what happened in the video. You don't need to
oh,
say
I mean,
it.
Or
okay.
You can guess. Yeah.
Been dying for 3 days to
I know you're dying to see the video, but.
Not me. Not me.
You know, one morning we're going to come in and TMZ is going to have it. They're going to get it overnight.
Yeah. And Joe's going to be watching with no volume in here.
The craft's going to wake up and find out they got the video.
No, someone's going to text him at 3 a.m. Yeah, stop it. Don't make faces, nothing like
all
that.
Right. Well,
I'm more interested to see if there's a press conference today and a certain person who's on Twitter all the time is commenting on this press conference all day long.
He's right about one thing.
Someone's going to be very involved and invested in this.
The president is going to dogpile on this guy. Oh, my gosh.
Should be an interesting day here.
Yeah.
Because it looks like,
I'll tell you what. He's gone from teasing as he's going to run from president to doing friggin' time.
To 100 years in jail. Good Lord.
What a turnaround.
Interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff. Robert Kraft.
Say what a turnaround.
What a turnaround, man.
How
we talk about A-Rod's turnaround, how great it was?
This guy
is going the opposite way.
Well, listen, we got to go to break here before I end up saying something and getting in trouble.
Yeah, probably. We're making
a
face.
A turnaround.
I just want to just say
we're just
this.
Making a face that makes me throw up.
You know, there's a camera in there.
Yeah, CBS looking right at you.
All right, well, listen, then while they're looking at me, I want to tell them, too, read my lips.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
I would say all options are on the table for us still. Like I said, it always has to be the right guy, you know, in terms of personality, the leadership skills, what you're asking him to do in terms of is he going to fit what Chad and Brian believe in. So, again, it's going to be a lot of time here in the spring still getting to know a lot of these kids. So, to determine if that's who Brian and Chad, myself, all believe is the right guy to lead us in the future. So, whether it's this year or next year or maybe take one both this year and next year, you know. But I think at that position, you can never be satisfied until you have a guy that you really feel is going to give you a chance to win a championship.
So all those options are on the table this year, next year, maybe doing one each draft. Are those options you guys are all considering?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, if we've winning eight games, and that means we've drafted well with a lot of good young players playing, and they're winning games. But also next year, we have, I think, 11 or 12 picks right now with stuff going on still that in terms for the future, then there's stuff we still can do a lot of stuff in 2020.
So that winning eight games could fit into the master plan. Winning eight games next year.
I don't know how many we're gonna win. Everyone keeps saying tanking and we're gonna go and be crap. I said I don't know what we'll be. So I mean, if these guys go out and we have some good young players and they play well and we win eight games, they go, all right, we won eight games and we got, you know, right now 11 or 12 picks right now for next year with the draft still approaching. Who knows if we get more? So I mean, it's having that. Those picks in 2020 give you a lot of maneuvering this year's draft and next year's draft and towards as you keep building.
That was Chris Greer live from the owners' meetings yesterday. We're going to go to Cameron Wolf now, ESPN reporter for the Miami Dolphins on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Cameron, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, y'all. How's everybody doing?
Cam, we're doing good, man. Let me just go with this one. Get out of salary cap hell. Prepare for spending in 2020. Boy, you laid it out there with A lot of Mike Tannenbaum, man. Somebody gave you a lot of stuff, man. Talk a little bit about your article. I thought it was interesting, some of the stuff you talked about with the mistakes of restructuring to give bad contracts.
Yeah. I just wanted to be point blank with laying out the Dolphins' money situation. Like we're seeing this offseason, they've sort of played in the little kid's pen as far as salary given out to players. You know, Fitzpatrick was probably their biggest deal, and they only gave him, you know, $5.5 million a year. So you kind of look at how they got here, and they were in a situation where they gave out these big contracts that resulted in a lot of dead money from Dominick Sue to Ryan Tannehill to Andre Branch. So some of these deals that we look at now and say they were bad deals for the team, and you have to get out of that situation. And that's something that Chris Greer has alluded to publicly. That's something that when you look at their books, it's clear that what was done in the Mike Tannenbaum era has set them up in a position where they aren't able to spend easily, and they have to get out of that before they can do anything in this rebuild. So as important as finding that franchise quarterback will be, figuring out how to use their money better and not getting in an area where they have $35 million in dead money, which is most in the NFL, is something that's going to be, you know, probably 1A and 1B with finding a franchise quarterback in this rebuild.
Robert Quinn, the Robert Quinn situation, I know that was in your article as well. Is that coming to a halt? Like, are they still looking for a trade partner? Because even if they cut him, it's still cap space, right? No matter what, if they trade him or cut him?
Yeah, Robert Quinn's contract is set up to the point where they paid the $1.1 million bonus. So he has another $11.8 million in his salary. That's non-guaranteed. So if they cut him or trade him, that money would leave off the books. So that's another potentially $11 million in salary cap. But what they're trying to do is what they did with the Ryan Tannehill deal, is try to eat a little bit of money on that deal and get a better draft pick from him. And right now they're playing a negotiating war where they're trying to get as many teams as they can to bid against them and try to up that draft pick. So, you know, he visited Dallas last week. He's visiting New Orleans, two teams who both have interest in him. So really what the Dolphins are trying to do is they're trying to see, hey, can we get a fourth-round pick in 2020? Can we get a third-round pick in 2020 if we eat, you know, $5 or $6 million of his salary in the form of the signing bonus? So I think you'll see that deal get done in some capacity. I don't believe Chris Greer when he says they're going to keep him on the roster. I think they're either going to trade him or they're going to release him, and I think they have enough interest to get a trade.
Cam, I want to ask you about the structure. I'm going to let it go today. I swear, you're the last guy I'm going to bring it up with. Just the structure from last year. Mike Tannenbaum, VP of Football Operations, the highest, most powerful title. General manager next, and then head football coach, where I know Adam Gase had some say-so and made a lot of bad choices with guys that he wanted to keep and everything. Where did Chris Greer fit in, though? He still had the GM title. Help me out. The other two guys are gone, as we know. How much of everything did Chris Greer have to do with it, or was he just going along with guys at both ends?
Well, look, I don't think Chris Greer deserves to be absolved for everything. You know, he was a part of that regime. No matter if he had final say in every situation or not, he was in those rooms, and he had a voice. He could have spoke up if he didn't like anything. So I think that, you know, all three parties, you know, Gase, Tannenbaum and Greer deserve, you know, some blame for how these last 4 years are going, and obviously two of them are gone. But I think when you look at the situation and what their main responsibilities were, from my understanding, Chris Greer's, you know, main responsibility where he had the most say was the draft. So when you look at his track record, you say, okay, how did he draft? And that's a question mark. You know, he made some really good picks with Xavier Howard and Laramie Tunsil and a few others like in the air. We don't know what Mike Gesicki's going to be. We don't know
Charles Harris, right?
You know, Charles Harris, Raekwon McMillan. So, you know, he's got a mixed bag in that regard. But when you look at the money part of the situation, and there was a bigger group, but largely that falls on Mike Tannenbaum. And then when you look at the coaching and the roster construction and getting rid of players who don't fit your scheme, that's largely Adam Gase. So when you look at those just in that peripheral, kind of see, okay, we blame this person for this, we blame that person for this, and now we're left with this.
So you signed two tight ends. You drafted two last year. That was a huge mistake, right? Obviously, someone's wrong here. Something happened here, because why would you draft two guys last year in the second and fourth round and then pick up two tight ends this year in free agency? Maybe I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, I think that they were extremely disappointed probably from what they got from Mike Gesicki and Durham Smythe. I think that no player has a bigger jump to go from year one to year two than Mike Gesicki. I think it was a wake-up call for him, how physical the NFL was, and I don't think he was prepared for it. So I think that, you know, they look at tape. I'm sure Brian Flores looked at tape, and he said, hey, we've got to get guys who are more physical and better, you know, handling, you know, NFL pass rushers and NFL players. So that's why you bring in a Dwayne Allen or Clive Wofford. You know, they're going to give Gesicki another chance to be the guy that drafted him to be. And Greer, that's another Greer pick, so he wants him to succeed. But there's no question, you look at that pick and you say, that doesn't go the way we wanted it to, at least in year one.
All right, Omar and I have been having a little back and forth on this quarterback situation.
Okay.
Cam, so I want to get your take. I'm very open-minded today, man. I'm in a really good I'm in a good mood. So
you're in a great mood.
Yeah, no, I'm in a really good mood. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. I just, Cam, you know, we're talking about taking quarterback, which I don't have a problem taking quarterback every year till you get your one guy and your two guy. I really don't. And not sure if we have either right now. We got to wait and see down the road. But so if we draft a quarterback, you don't want to see a quarterback taken in a first round back-to-back years like potentially Arizona's going to do. That was my argument with Omar. And Omar says, if you got to do it, you got to do it. Because I'm going to tell you, if Chris Greer drafts one 13th or moves up a little bit and grabs one this year and then goes, I don't know, let's grab this guy next year, we're in a good situation, let's take him, then he got to go. If you got to take a first-round quarterback 2 years in a row, you got a problem. Well, what's your take?
I think that my whole thing is that we've sort of been in a groupthink society at the NFL, that there's only one way to do things. And I think that when you go upon a position like quarterback, which is the most important position in all of sports, you have to get that position right, no matter what. If you feel like, hey, I trust my evaluation to pick one guy and just ride with him for the end, and I'll sink or swim with him, then go ahead. But if you really want to maximize your earnings, that's why I believe, you draft quarterback. I believe you draft a quarterback every year in some capacity, every year. And you continue to develop them and you trade them like New England's doing if you need to. And that's how you build a franchise. As far as drafting a quarterback 2 years in a row in the first round, that's a bold move, because essentially you're giving up on the first-year guy. So I think the only way you do that is if, like in Arizona's case, you see a year of Josh Rosen, and you decide, hey, he's not the guy. And I don't have any problem with them saying, hey, we're going to draft Kyler Murray if we think he's going to be a better franchise quarterback than Josh Rosen. So if the Dolphins happen to find themselves in that situation, then I wouldn't have any problem with it. But that's essentially saying that the guy you drafted in 2019 has already shown that he's not the guy.
Yeah.
That'll get some GMs fired. You know, like Joe brings it up all the time in Arizona, how – if you do give up on Rosen, you get a third-round pick for him, if that's what the market is for him. But if the Dolphins move up, I mean, if at 13 they're sitting there and Haskins or you know, I don't think Kyler Murray's going to fall, but if Haskins somehow falls at 13, the Dolphins have to take him at 13, right? If he's sitting on the board and the Dolphins don't have to trade up, you got to take Haskins.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, Haskins is that quarterback that's the wild card. And the smokescreen of the draft process is really how far do you think he's going to fall. Some people think the Giants are a sweet spot for him. I know some people on our ESPN side have reported that that's not going to happen. So if he doesn't go to the Giants, how far does he fall? Does he fall to Jacksonville? Does Jacksonville pick a quarterback after signing Nick Foles? Does Denver pick Dwayne Haskins? They're reportedly in love with Drew Locke. So if he does start falling there, then maybe you ditch the 2020 plan and go ahead and get Haskins. But, you know, I think that they draft a quarterback this year regardless. I think that Chris Greer sort of laid the foundation that, hey, we're going to get a quarterback in some capacity. But if it's not Haskins at 13, I think they wait to the middle rounds and get a guy like maybe a Will Greer or Tyree Jackson or someone of that sort.
Cam, does everybody think for sure next year's quarterback class is clearly better? Is that kind of the thought from everybody in the NFL and the Dolphins?
Yeah, that's the scuttlebutt, but the thing that I'm trying to be really cautious about is that we say that every year.
every year we say, oh, this is gonna, the next year is going to be the great quarterback crop. And last year we were talking about Justin Herbert, and then Justin Herbert decides to come back. You know, we don't know what these quarterbacks are going to do. Does somebody get hurt? Somebody fall off the map? Does Tua decide, hey, I'm going to come back for 2021 because he's a junior? So you have a lot of uncertainty with each of these crops. So talent-wise, yeah, you've got a Heisman Trophy winner, Tua. You've got Justin Herbert, who looks like, you know, a really strong pocket passer, a guy who can be, you know, an Andrew Luck-type mold. Same with Jake Fromm to a lesser extent. So, yeah, the talent is there. But there's so much uncertainty that it would take a lot of guts to bet, you know, your livelihood, your job on something that's still a year away.
You see the Dolphins trading out of that 13 pick if a quarterback isn't there? Yeah, trading down.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I definitely think they could do that, especially with Greer talking about collecting picks. If they decide that, hey, our quarterback's not here this year, then you all eyes go to 2020. So you have to collect as many picks. I wouldn't be shocked if they traded for 2020 picks with a 2019 pick. You know, maybe trying to trade for a 2020 first-round pick if they move back. So, yeah, I think they would look at that, and then all eyes would, like you said, go to 2020 if they don't get that QB this year.
Cam, did we keep Ryan Tannehill too long?
I think so. I know Chris Greer said they didn't. But I think that, you know, 2017 was, you know, when Ryan Tannehill gets hurt and then Jay Cutler's there, I thought that was the year that you could go ahead and move on from him. I thought that they waited at least a year too long. And I know there's the fear of, hey, we don't want to be irrelevant and not have anyone. But the other situation is you're mediocre and now you have no answer. So I think the biggest mistake, like Chris Greer admitted, was not developing a quarterback behind him. But second, I think they waited a year, maybe 2 years, too long to get rid of him.
Cam, one of the arguments, as you know, and you and I have spoken about this, was pressure from the top on an owner that wanted to win right now. Did that play effect in all this, you think, going back to everybody, that the big three guys from last year in the front office?
I think absolutely. I think the issue with the NFL too much, and especially with the Dolphins over the last few years, is that everybody's, you know, trying to save their job, and it's a year-to-year business, and, you know, usually patience isn't really a virtue in this league. So everything's about win now. There's no long-term plan because nobody believes they're going to be there long enough to see it through.
Right.
So I think even Steve Ross has mentioned this offseason he's had to change his mindset that, hey, you know, winning 8 games just so we could be in the race is not a plan. That's not a worthwhile plan to do in the NFL. So I think that this plan, although it's, you know, controversial because it's a tank versus rebuild talk, I think it's probably the right way to go about it rather than just, hey, put a few Band-Aids on things and think we're going to be better next year.
Yeah, Band-Aids have not been good to us. No, you're right.
No. Right. All right, before we let you go, Cam, is there a short leash on Chris Greer? Is this going to be something where if he doesn't turn something around the next year or two, he's in trouble? Because I think Flores probably is safe for a couple years, but because Greer has been here and been here through all that stuff, do you believe that there might be a short leash on him?
That's an interesting question because I usually think that the GMs and head coaches are tied together for the most part, but the fact that Chris Greer has been here gives him a different timeline, so to speak. But the way that they're planning this thing and the way that Chris Greer's going about it makes me believe that Stephen Ross gave each of them, a sort of secure line that, hey, we're giving you at least 3 years, you know, to figure this thing out. Because there's no way as a GM you go about a plan to completely tear down and rebuild if you don't think you have at least 3 years. So, you know, maybe Brian Flores has one rope. Maybe he gets 4 no matter what. But I think Chris Greer gets at least 3 based on just the way they're going about this rebuild, and they're letting him do it versus have, you know, a few other people in the room make a decision.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Cam.
Thanks, guys.
Right, that's Cameron Wolfe, ESPN reporter for the Miami Dolphins.
All right, big night, big night for Chris Bosch, man, and a big night for the Miami Heat. They got the Orlando Magic in town. They're smoking hot coming in. They get a win against 76ers. We'll have more on Chris Bosch in the Heat when we come back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.